is a Union County History interview with Pat Rankin, and it's October 26, 2005. Can you tell me your full name and when and where were you born?
Okay. Patrick Earl Rankin, born in this house over there in that room. That's what I've been told.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember that day, but
uh-huh.
It's pretty reliable source.
What was the date? When were you born?
October the 20th, 1927.
Oh, so you just had a birthday.
Yes.
Who were your parents?
My mother was Mary Thomas Rankin Finley. Her maiden name was Finley.
Right.
And my dad was Earl Rankin. He had no official middle name, just Earl Rankin.
Okay. What did your father do?
He was a logger until he bought this farm, and then he farmed for the rest of his working life.
Was he born in Union County, or did he come to Union County?
He came to Union County from Ohio, the state of Ohio.
When he was young,
he was 12 years old. So you want to know how he came out of here?
Well, yeah. Did his family relocate? Is that how he ended up here in Union County?
Yes, they did. And they came here because my grandfather, my dad's dad, had several land holdings right here in the Grand Ronde Valley. And so when my dad was 12 years old, the whole family came out here on a train. And that was 1897 when they came to Le Grand. All of the women and my grandfather were in a coach on the train, and they brought animals and furniture, you know, household goods, all of that, in a freight car. And my dad was elected to come back here, or come here, fare free in that freight car. So,
how come he was fare free?
Well, that was the third choosing to save a few bucks. And the railroad never caught on. He didn't especially enjoy that because he was by himself.
Oh.
And never been in a freight car going across the United States. And
uh-huh.
12 years old.
No windows.
No windows.
No.
And my grandfather would go back there several times a day and take him food, and they had a place fixed up for him to sleep.
Huh.
Probably grandfather would feel like shooting me for telling you that.
Oh. Well, he can catch up with me later. What did your father do first when he, so I assume he went to school here then, and?
He went to school for a very short period of time at the Iowa School house on what is now Hunter Lane, and the school was built on 160 acres that my Uncle John Morrison, his Uncle John Morrison too, donated to the school district. He didn't donate the 160 acres, but I think it was 10 acres right in the corner of on Hunter Lane.
And that's where your father went to school?
And that's where he went to school. And he didn't go very far in like possibly the fourth grade. He did not go to high school. I don't know just how far through that grade school he did go.
Okay. So what did he do before he became a farmer here on this homestead? And for the information of the transcriber, this place we're talking about is their residence here at 10109 Wallala Lake Highway, Island City, outside of LeGrand. And we're talking about the same place. So what did your father do then before he took on this farm?
Well, he went to work in the woods for, later, it was Grant Long Lumber Company. And I can't tell you who the Jeppo loggers were before Grand Long Lumber Company, when he was possibly 15 or 16 years old. That's when he started working. So, he was a farmer. That's what he always did when he worked in the woods.
A faller is the person who actually takes the logs down, cuts the logs down.
Cuts the trees down, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was really good with an axe, boy. And he built several log cabins locally, and some log cabins on the Crescent Lake, Odell Lake, in the Cascade Range.
Any of those still exist?
You know,
not sure.
I do not know. Charlotte and I were at that lake about 4 or 5 years ago, and I wish we had taken the time to go around that lake and see if we could find some of those cabins. I have a picture of one of those cabins. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty good sized cabin. He did that at the time that he worked for the layout engineer for the Southern Pacific Railroad, when they built the what they called the Natron Cutoff. It was a big saving for the route from between Seattle to Los Angeles, and they rerouted the railroad for about 25 miles in the Cascade Range and through a tunnel. I don't know how long that tunnel is, but it's a fairly long tunnel. So the engineer he worked for would ran the center line, and my dad cleared the brush and trees so that he could run the center line, run it.
Now, so that Natron network was finished up when?
I'd say 1920.
Okay. Now, how did your father come to own this farm?
He and my mother met in a logging camp called Camp J, up the Grand Long River, in fact, up the creek from the ranch we owned. There's a map or a portrait of it right there.
Oh.
But they were married in 1925, and he had saved his money and wanted to get out of the logging business and start farming. So after they were married, they bought this farm and built this house. Well, that's the old house is right there, but and Charlotte and I have added on to it, but
this is still the original house that you were born in.
Yes.
How large is this farm and what grows here?
Well, we have sold most of the farmland from this farm. Originally, when he bought it, it was 40 acres, and then they, a short time later, bought another 25 acres added to it. It was 65 acres up until 1992, and that's when Charlotte and I sold about 55 acres of it. We still have it within the shape of a triangle, and we still have a triangle left.
What grows here?
Over the years, all kinds of grains, you know, wheat, barley, oats, then alfalfa, that was when we had it, they grew those things. They used to grow strawberries, and what are now known as Marion berries. This year, the people who are leasing it out have it in mint. It has had one mint crop harvested from it.
So, the maximum size of the area was 65 acres at one time that you owned over the years.
Yeah.
And some of this is leased out, or you sold this out? When you reduced your property.
Yeah, when we reduced the size of it, we sold it to a corporation, really. And they farmed it for about 8 years, and then they leased it to another farmer, and another farmer leases it yet.
I see. What do you grow currently on the 10 acres that you still have?
Lawn and...
Did you say
lawn?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Lawn and trees, and right there, I have continuously, grew one wheat crop, and then I've sort of followed it ever since. I haven't planted it to anything. Kept it clean. Every year, kill any weeds no weeds have gone to seed out there on that fence. Street existed down to what it is now.
Excuse me. Well, let's talk briefly about your mother. Now, we know your dad met your mother at this at a logging camp, was it?
Yeah.
And they got married in 1920?
25. Yes.
And did your mother work? Did she have an occupation? Or?
In the logging camp, she was a cook.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was her only occupation, really, besides being a housewife, of course, after they were married.
Uh-huh.
And then she was a housewife the rest of her life.
Now, what was your mother's name?
Mary Thomas Finley Rankin.
And did she grow up here? Did she relocate here?
She relocated here. She was born in far western Kentucky, and her family came to a homestead in Wallowa County in 1903. And she, they only stayed on that homestead for 3 years, and then they moved into the town of Wallowa, and she lived there until she started working in the logging camps.
Did she go to school or finish school in Wallowa?
She finished high school in Wallowa. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have one sister. She passed away this year, in April. That's the only.
So there were just two of you.
Two children.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents live out the rest of their lives here in Union County then?
Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm. Are they buried here?
Yeah, they are both buried here.
Mm-hmm.
In the cemetery in town.
Hillcrest Cemetery.
Yeah, it is Hillcrest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's my dad's family's cemetery plot, or where both mother and dad are. Yeah.
So it's like a Rankin section of the cemetery then?
Actually,
Rankin family, or
the John Morrison that I mentioned a while back.
Yeah.
Is the first one buried in that cemetery plot.
Was that, did you say that was your dad's uncle?
That's right.
Dad's mother's brother, so it was your granduncle.
My granduncle.
Mm-hmm.
You got it.
Okay.
You got it.
Okay. All right, well.
He came from Scotland.
Did he?
Yes, and my grandmother, his sister, came from Ohio.
Mm.
Okay. Well, but he brought her. She was born in Scotland, too, and then this Uncle John brought her to the United States. And she married my grandfather in Ohio.
But all these people ended up out here in LeGrand or Union County.
Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm.
Several family brothers. They weren't all boys. Just two girls, and the rest were boys. Some of them did not stay here very long. They went into Washington. One of them went to Washington That's all. The rest of them were either here or in Westwood, Oregon.
I see. Where did you, you grew up here, obviously. Have you always lived in this house then?
I've always lived in this house except for from 1945 until 1960. In those years, I was first in the Army. I was back here briefly. Then I went to school, went to college at down in Corvallis, or Oregon State. Then I met Charlotte, and we were married in 1950. I graduated from Oregon State with Charlotte, and Charlotte and two of our children, Charlotte Marie and Paul, were born before 1954. And then, after I graduated, I worked briefly for the local power company, less than 6 months. And then I went to, we went to Alfredo, Washington, where I worked for Washington State. It was college then, Washington State University later. And I went through a year training program as a irrigation engineer on the Columbia Basin irrigation project in 1960. I came back to this family barn. We all came back to the family barn. Because my dad finally wanted to retire. He was, gosh, how old was he? He was 16 and 60. He was 76.
And that's what brought you back here to Union County?
Yeah.
Where did you go to school? Where did you go to grade school?
Well, I went through the first 8 grades at the Island City School. It's the old Island City School now, the building itself, but over there. And then I was a freshman through senior at LeGrand High School. I actually, after I graduated from LeGrand High School, I went one term at Eastern Oregon College of Education, it was then, in 1945. Actually, I really didn't, I got credit for the, for the went up all term at that school, but I was inducted into the Army before finals. Well, it was, I don't know, I was inducted on December the 10th. And actually the term was not over, but they gave me credit for all of it.
So you went into the Army right from college. What year was that?
Yeah. Now that was 1945.
I see. Do you still see classmates or people you know from Island City Elementary? Are there still anybody around that you still interact with?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. out that are. Not near as many as there used to be here.
Sure.
Not too long ago, but...
Did you walk to school from here? Was there a bus?
No schools had buses. Then. No, I walked. No. Now that was walked to the grade school. High school, the folks got me a bicycle when I was a freshman, and I rode that bicycle the first year. It got in the winter, and in the winter time, I rode with a teacher who drove from Cove. I would walk over to the Iowa City store, and he'd pick me up and take me to school, and then vice versa, you know, mm-hmm. coming back home. Mm-hmm. Then, when I was a sophomore, it was hard to find somebody to ride, and I also couldn't ride that bicycle, so I got a student license to drive the car to school and ride straight back home from school.
And of course you did that, right?
Oh,
I never took a detour.
That's in my heart.
Did you ever take a detour with that student license?
I probably did,
uh-huh.
but you know, it's been so long, I couldn't go into any detail about that.
Well,
it was gas rationing too.
Because of the war.
Because of the war, gas and many other rationing. And let's see, I got that, I think I was 14 when I got that student license too.
What did you drive?
It was a 1925 Dodge car. It's a car that my dad bought new. Right here in the grab, mm-hmm. just before he was married. He bought that car in the spring, and he and mother were married in August of that year. An old-time names are slipping away from me, but a well-known car dealer right here in the Grand.
Did you drive anybody else to school when you had this license? Did others ride with you from out here or back?
After my sister was going to high school, that I would take her. And then occasionally, you know, might be somebody else too. But
did you have to take a driver's test? Did you have to take a behind the wheel to get that special license?
No, I did not. I did have to take kind of a pretty elemental written test. And I had to take a vision and another test to see if I was colorblind, which was a common thing then.
I think they still do some of that. What kind of special things do you remember from going to school at Island City? What was it like to go to school at Island City when you were young?
Well, the first day was really traumatic. I was a very sheltered person. Boy. Young boy. And my mother took me over there On the first day.
Are you talking about first grade?
I'm talking about first grade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I started to school when I was 5 years old. And that was a kind of a big debate whether I should be doing it when I was five or wait until I was six. My mother brought that up to the teacher, and the teacher figured I could handle it. I don't know how she knew that, but she figured I could, and so Mom and Dad figured, well, if she says it's okay, why, you're going to go to school. The next day, I walked and I went to school, but I never quite made it there. And I came back home and I hid out down here on the river.
What'd you do?
And that thorn brush is still there.
What did you do all day? It is still October 26, 2005. We're interviewing Pat Rankin, who's telling us about hiding out all day by the river here on his second day of first grade. And you got bored. What else?
But I waited until I could see kids going home to Fruitdale. That way I knew what time it was. And then I came on to the house, and I know that they did not know that I had been there, but they knew something was going on.
How do you think they knew that?
I don't think they knew because they had gone over there either to the school to see if I was there. But just by, maybe by the condition of my clothes and my lunch, I remember that I did not eat all the lunch. And for some reason. And they asked a couple of kind of pointed questions until I couldn't deny it any longer. I was found out, that's all. So I had to admit it. Dad went over to the school the next morning and talked to the teacher, and also took me. Were you
truant anymore after that?
Nope.
No.
I knew the jig was up, so I was going to have to face it. That's all there is to it. Gonna have to go to school.
That's quite a story.
You've never heard anybody tell you a story like that before.
Oh, sure. I'm hearing.
Have you?
I'm hearing stories, but I.
I show up.
So, what other kinds of things?
I should have told the folks something. I'm not ready to go away. You're at 5 years old. I will wait another year.
Yeah.
That should have
been. That might have been it. What other kinds of things? It was a lot because everybody
was bigger than I was. Those were the days where you straightened out a lot of your own clothes yourself. I mean, if there was any antagonistic things going on, why, you took care of it. And I was going to come out the loser, I knew that.
So a lot of these kids were bigger than you? Were there bullies right away? Were you bullied by others in first grade?
No, only one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, only one. And that just lasted, a pretty short period of time. Mm-hmm. And then we got that straightened out. It wasn't because of me, but it was the rest of them. The ones that were on my side made it pretty clear to the bully that he was going to be in big trouble.
You went there for eighth grade?
Uh-huh. Now, that was when it was eighth grade. In those days.
So you brought your own lunch, so there were no cafeteria services or...
Yeah, the winter time, yep. In the winter time, there was a school lunch, and all of the families of the kids would participate. Mother's turn came up about once a month, only in the winter, cold weather. They were responsible for feeding about 80 to 90 kids, the family members.
I mean, they would actually come to school and cook lunch for students on this particular
day? They took it at home and take it.
They'd make it at home and bring it in and serve.
Yep. Yeah.
And so each person they were responsible for buying and putting the ingredients together and all of that, and they would just bring it in.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. The school system did not pay for the school lunches. They
did other parents chip in to subsidize for this, or each of these parents were responsible one day or more a month for the entire student body?
Each family was responsible for the whole fare, including serving it. You know, they have their own eating utensils. The school had their own eating utensils, and they had a kitchen too. And of course, the up plates and whatever.
Did the teachers eat?
Yes. They ate too.
What kind of things would show up on that menu? Was it good?
It was always good. Nobody was going to bring anything that was not good, because they never would let that down if that happened.
Uh-huh.
It was just, good, good, wholesome food. Probably 50% of the kids there were off of farms in those days. There were a lot more farmers than there are now. And it was mostly farm-raised food, too. Preserved. If Mom took a notion that it would be chicken, why, she had lots of canned chicken downstairs in jars, or if it was ham, they had ham that Dad had smoked and cured. There was a butcher section every fall about this time of the year was butchering time.
So there were hogs were raised out here also?
Yeah, but I forgot to mention that mm-hmm. that's how Dad utilized the wheat, was to feed it to hogs. And he'd fatten 250 hogs every year. Right up there in that barn.
Hmm. So the grain was used to fatten the hogs or keep the hogs fed.
Yep.
And yep. It really kind of was in the business of hogs.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
So the that's an interesting thing that parents kicked in and cooked lunches for school. What other kinds of things can you tell me about the grade school experience in your time? What kinds of fun things did you do?
Well, another fun thing always that everybody put a lot of work into and everybody participated in was a Christmas program for, there was always that evening, usually it was Christmas Eve, where they would do it. And ours, we didn't have a room in that school for a play or a, you know, a Christmas program. And also Santa Claus was always there too. And so we used to do it in what is a, was the Farm Bureau Hall right over here, across from BGG. At that time it was a church, and that's where that, and it had a stage. And my dad was Santa Claus several times for that. In fact, there's the jingle bells. That were, they were used on horses that were, my dad farmed with horses first. But those bells came from Ohio too. They, among all, you know, those personal attacks that came from back there.
And so he would use those bells when it was your turn to play Santa Claus?
Yep. Yeah, he'd come in and jingle those bells, and like that's, Santa Claus, of course, was on the sleigh with the sleigh bells.
What else? What was it like to go to school there? What was the routine day like to go to school at Island City?
I think we had a wonderful opportunity to learn. First of all, there were never very many kids in each grade. You know, like there might be 10 in the third grade. Well, that teacher might have three grades though to take care of. And then one of them two grades. But they could just give you a lot of, you know, personal attention. They could really keep track of you.
Sure. So how many students were in this first grade class then? And did your teacher teach another grade besides that?
Yes, the teacher taught first, second, and third. There was probably an average of about 10 in each of those grades.
Were you all in one room?
And we were all in one room.
Do you remember that teacher's name?
Michelson. Amelia Michelson. Now, she had, of course, kept track of her and her sister for, well, till they passed away.
Her sister also a teacher?
Margaret. Margaret was never a sister, never a teacher. No, just Amelia is the only one who was a...
She was the working woman in that family?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, she was also never married. In fact, neither of those gals were ever married. They were born and raised on a farm right out here.
Now this Miss Michelson, did you have her for first, second, and third grade then?
No. I had her for the first grade only. Now Bab, she quit teaching, and Teresa Gilhuber taught first, second, third grade. And she was a great gal too. The county had a speaking contest every year. There were lots of categories in it. And she required everybody to learn a poem by heart, of course, and to practice speaking it for probably about 6 weeks. And then they would have a contest within Island City School, and the winners would participate in a county, they called it declamatory mm-hmm. contest.
Mm-hmm.
And they would compete on an evening, and they would give a first, second, third place medals for however you placed. They had a large group, like 12 teachers would score right there, just as soon as you finished that, your presentation of your poem, why they would score it. And you were, after it was all over with, they would have all the medals out. And I won a contest. I got first place for My Shadow. That was the name of the poem.
Was My Shadow.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That was, what a serious, I think. It was serious and humorous.
And what grade was that you won that in?
That was in third grade. I was in the third grade.
And this was the second teacher that you had that you talked about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So how does it work? Well, let's say whether you're in first, second, or third grade, how does the routine actually work that this teacher gets around to all of those students and all of those different activities? How would you deal? What was the day like? To do that, because she can't be giving you attention all day,
she could you personally,
right?
But she there would be an allotted time for each subject. She was keeping track of that.
Mm-hmm.
And she would actually go from, well, she may present the material as a kind of an overlay. Then we would be expected to either read a book or look at the board. She may put that stuff on the board while in the info on the board, chalkboard. And we were expected to digest it and come up with probably a paper written whatever that she would collect so she could tell what we were learning and maybe what we weren't learning too.
So,
but she was always going right down the line looking and maybe asking, maybe saying something.
Right. So yeah. She'd work. These grades were separated in the room that you were in. She'd
yep.
work a little bit with this grade
yep.
and then with this grade
yep.
and move around like that.
Yep.
But each grade knew what they were supposed to be working on.
Yeah.
It wasn't yeah. spelling first, second, and third grade at the same time. Would it be spelling in the first grade and maybe English in second and math in the third? Or Were you all working on the exact same topic? I'm just wondering.
Boy, I
can't remember.
You know, I cannot remember that.
But it's important to know, I guess, that you were in a multi-grade classroom and the teacher had to move constantly to address all of the grades that she taught.
That's true. Okay. That went on.
Did your teachers teach extracurricular subjects too, like say music or art or?
Music, yes. But that was a long later. Singing, yes. I suppose that we sang from the time we were in first grade. The principal, who had the seventh and eighth grade, organized a band, I played a trumpet. Folks bought me a trumpet. And I learned how to play a trumpet. He also was a violin player, and quite a few kids played the violin. No piano. No one tried to teach piano.
So you didn't have a music teacher in the classroom. I was taught by regular teachers teaching.
That's my music teacher did go around the whole school and teach music. That's right.
Okay.
No, there wasn't any such thing.
How about sports?
We did have some sports, but they weren't a heck of a lot at Island City because we had a playground, we could play baseball, but we didn't have a gym for basketball, and what else is left? Basketball, football.
So it wasn't organized sports. Were you required to, did anybody teach physical education? Was that part of the curriculum?
We had at a recess, we had a organized PE where that was mostly running, so that you did get some exercise. But, you know, in those days, most kids had the PE all waiting for them when they got home.
Farming chores and other things like that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Did you have those chores also?
Oh yeah.
What were your chores? What were your main duties?
I had to make sure that the wood box for the cook stove, which was right over there. In fact, the wood box is in that room now, that our wood room. But the old wood box is in there. I had to make sure that mother had plenty of wood for the cook stove, which was over against that wall. And all the wood was stored right out here, you know, like 70, 80 feet from the house. You know, put it in a wheelbarrow, bring it through the back door right here. Get rid of the wood box. Then we had a we had a pitcher pop.
A what?
A pitcher pop.
Oh,
water. Or water. Mm-hmm. And it was located right there. They had a big galvanized tank that my dad made, and that was off top of the Dutch dome, and it had a hydrant on it, faucet, and so when there was a fire in the Dutch dome, which there was most of the time, it was heating out water, and that was the dishwater, also laundry water too.
So there was not running water in this house, is that what you're saying?
This house did not have electricity until 1947. In fact, I was gone. I was in the Army when they finally were able to get electricity. None of these fires just didn't have it.
Was it just that it was too far out and they hadn't gotten out here? Is that why?
Electricity was right over that house that's a 1,000 feet away across the river, always had electricity. They're in Island City, but the electric company would not extend those lines without signing a contract that you pay so much for that line extension. Mm. And it was way over $1,000 that they started out with when they built this house to put electricity over here to extend it. Mm-hmm. Well, boy, $1,000 was a lot of money.
Yeah. So you didn't have electricity or running water. What does that leave? Electric, running water. When did you get a phone out here?
The first phone was in this house when Charlotte and I moved back here from Washington in 1960.
Was it a crank phone or was it an electric telephone?
No, it was a wall hung
crank telephone
dial.
Oh,
dial phone with the
receiver was different from
you remember
all
of what these.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At that ranch, we Charlotte and I lived there the first 2 years that we were married. It had a crank telephone it was 12 miles from home to a station right down here at Deal Canyon. And the participants, the ones who built that line, had to maintain it. And that was put in there. I'm not sure, but after 1920 is when they built that phone line.
So the phone that you had here, it was a regular telephone, or wasn't a crank phone by then. Did you have to have assistance to make a call, or could you call direct?
Let's see, we had to dial. We could dial. Yeah, it was a dial phone. Yeah,
now
but it went too far into that, into dialing. Before, you called the operator first and gave her a number.
My great grandmother in Enterprise still had a crank phone. When she died in 1965, and she didn't have a dial telephone for very long before that. and all. I remember it was still on the wall. We had a crank.
Okay.
So did you know what your... You said there was a crank phone at the other place, this other house?
Yeah, at the ranch house.
And was a dial phone here?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
How did people bathe out here?
Well, the bathroom in there had a big old cast iron bathroom in it. And we had an outdoor privy that out here, outside. But Mom and Dad did put a bathroom in. I still got that bathroom. And took the water, hot water, right out of that tank I was telling you about,
on the
and poured it in to the into the bathtub. And then that bathtub, the bathtub and the kitchen sink had a common drain system. So all you had to do was pull the plug out of the cast iron tub and it all run out.
Uh-huh.
Same thing for the kitchen sink too.
About you were talking about the laundry. Was that a wringer washer? Was that a, it was, it doesn't sound like it was electric to begin with then.
That it was a wringer washer, but it was a old gasoline engine.
Uh-huh.
And Bob would have to wheel that out of the corner over and set up the tubs. It had a flexible exhaust with a kind of a buffer on the end of it. She put that out the door and so all the carbon monoxide would have been in the house. Fueled it and had a oil in the crankcase, and she would take the water out of that same hot water thingy and put it in there, put it in the washing machine. It was a good washing machine, a regular Maytag with a aluminum bowl. A tub.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that was, I can remember that. I can remember when they bought that washing machine. It was like 1933, 34, right in there, someplace. The Depression, it was right during the Depression when they got that. Otherwise, she did washing in wash tubs and a washboard.